Second parak of Avos, Mishnah Dalet. Have a zahir and b'rishus. Person should be careful with rishus. Rishus refers to government officials. She'ein mekarvin le'odom el letzerach atzmam. Because even though they appear to be your friends, they only bring people close to them for their own purposes. Nirim ka'ohavim b'shas hana'asan. They'll appear like good friends when they benefit. But they won't stand by the person when he needs the help. So the simple reading of the Mishnah is that one should not be deceived by the seemingly friendly overtures of elected officials or appointed officials, because one can assume that they only have their own interests in mind and not the people around them. That doesn't mean that there haven't been Askanim and Klal Yisrael who always are involved with government officials and trying to make things better for the Tzibur. But those people have to be careful. They have to be aware that just because today they're friendly doesn't mean that tomorrow they will be. And we have a long history of involvement with governments that were not always nice to the Jews. And people who represented the Tzibur often suffered because of it. And they knew this getting into it. It's almost a follow-up of the previous Mishnah, Kala Oiskim et Tzibur, Ye Oiskim Mehem B'Shem Shamayim. And you'll have a Siyata D'Shmaya. But part of being Oiskim et Tzorchit Tzibur sometimes is getting involved in political endeavors and being close to politicians, and they have to be careful. The Rabbeinu Yonah on this Mishnah makes an observation that's very important for us to be aware of. And he says that we have to understand that when it comes to malachim, when it comes to kings, when it comes to absolute great authorities, gam ahavasam, gam sin asam, lo biyodim hu. Their friendliness and their sinna is not in their hands. When a melech needs somebody, he brings him close and he shows him friendship when he benefits from it. This is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and not from the king. And the Ribbono Shel Olam made it that this person can be helpful to the king. If a person sins to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he's guilty and Hashem wants to put him off, so the melech who may want to do something good and give him kavod will not be able to, and the Ribbono Shel Olam will prevent it from happening. And that's what Shlomo HaMelech says in Mishlei, Pal Geimayim Lev Melech Biyad Hashem, that the Ribbono Shel Olam will manipulate the lev of the melech to wherever the Ribbono Shel Olam has it inclined. And because of this, we have to understand that the melech is merely a puppet. His lashon is ha'emes ein koyach biyado l'harav lo l'hetiv kim nefi devar alakim chayim u'melech olamim. Now, there's a few things we have to understand. Number one, we have to know that we have bechira and that we have to make hishtalos. And when there's an election and we have a voice, we are required to exercise our civil right and liberty to be able to go ahead and vote. And it's not something we should take lightly. If you're not registered, it might be too late. But the point is, this is something that is a requirement. It's not just a civic duty. Gedolei Yisrael have said that one who is capable of voting should do so. And this is part of hishtalos. You have to make your hishtalos. Ultimately, we say, Lev Melech B'yad Hashem. The Ribbono Shel Olam runs the world. And all the people who think they have power and authority are puppets in Hashem's hands. It is true that these puppets, these elected officials or appointed officials, have their own bechira. And they can act on their own bechira. But ultimately, the Ribbono Shel Olam never allows an individual's bechira to interfere with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's master plan. And this is where we get into all these discussions, and I don't know when's the last time I had it with any of you, but I remember one class came to me and said that there's this big picture and we're all part of the picture, and I said, no, you're not. And they did not like that at all. Maybe they are. The Ribbono Shel Olam has a plan. The Ribbono Shel Olam has intent of how the world is supposed to go and where it's headed. And the players in that plan can't have no bechira to interfere with that plan. So if Yehuda is supposed to marry Tamar to bring about David HaMelech, there's nothing he can do to avoid that. There's nothing he can try to get out of it. He's going to end up marrying Tamar and having children, Peres and Zerach, and his grandchildren will be David HaMelech. There's no, you can't say, well, I don't like the way she looks, or she's not smart enough for me. It doesn't work that way. When this has to happen, it's going to happen. And we're merely puppets. Now, for most people, you have a chira. You know, you could choose to marry somebody, choose not to marry somebody, and the Baruch Hu says, whatever you want. You know, you got bechira, I'll let you do what you want to do. If the choice of who you're going to marry will interfere with Hashem's master plan, you don't have a choice. The Baruch Hu makes it work out the way it wants to work out. So, when we start the big picture, when I look at the Baruch Hu's picture of things, I think of the Baruch Hu's master plan. So, we might be part of it, but probably we're not part of it. We're just along, but the people who are directly involved, they have got to do exactly what the Baruch Hu wants them to do, and the Baruch Hu makes sure it happens that way. When it comes to kings, presidents, people of great power and influence, their decisions can alter the course of events dramatically. The little people really can't change things so dramatically. You know, if someone elected to the state of Michigan Senate, okay, you know, it's an elected official, it's a chashuv thing, but I don't know if he's going to change the course of the world by his position. An elected president could. So when someone is in such a high position, it's almost like the Ribbono Shel Olam is taking away their bechira, and they're going to do what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants them to do. So when bad people in high positions do bad things, we're not saying they're tzaddikim, but we don't blame them and think we're just great people and they're just nasty anti-Semites. We have to do tshuva. The Ribbono Shel Olam is giving us a message. When Haman ascended to power and made a gezer against the Yidden, people didn't say, well, I'm a fine person, just he's an anti-Semite. They did tshuva. They realized that they're doing something wrong. They understood that if the Ribbono Shel Olam is making this happen, then we are responsible by our actions to deserve such a thing, and we've got to do tshuva because of it. Now, that doesn't mean Haman is a tzaddik. He's a bad person. He's a very bad person. And part of that is the Ribbono Shel Olam picks bad people to do his bidding when it's not something good. And the opposite, when someone in position of authority does good things for Klal Yisrael, so we thank the Ribbono Shel Olam. The person will thank him too. And he was picked to be a vehicle, a shliach of Hashem, and that's a good thing, because good people are picked to do good things. But ultimately, we have to understand, it doesn't start and end with the person on earth. When it's that level, it's from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So Ben Yehuda makes it very clear. We have to understand that Lev Melech B'Yad Hashem. A lot of people say in the plural, Lev Melech B'Yad Hashem. The Navi says Lev Melech B'Yad Hashem. It's in Hashem's hands. The Ribbono Shel Olam manipulates the decision-making of the great leaders of the world. And we have to recognize it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, we have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu when thanks are in order. We have to do tshuva when doing tshuva is in order. Again, you may be upset or happy with the political figure, but understand that he is just a pawn, so to speak, in the Ribbono Shel Olam's working of the world. Yes?
Do you still have questions?
Sure.
Just because the question comes to mind in terms of like a spiritual viewpoint as opposed to a physical viewpoint. So from the physical viewpoint, of course, Obama's border decisions are a lot more important. But from the spiritual viewpoint, don't we look at like any positive move that
Hashem wants to start. I'm not getting into individual candidates. The question you're asking is, if there is a candidate that is morally corrupt, but what's the other part of it?
No, I'm saying, because I'm a Jew, isn't any small decision I make so much more important than any huge decision any guy, even if he's the president, makes?
Is your vote more worth than someone else's vote?
No, my spiritual decisions. Any growth
I'm lost. Attitude. See, I'm not sure what you're asking. Some people will ask the question, do I vote based on who I think would be better for Ruchnius? Or do I vote on who would be better for Gash? Is that what you're asking? No. So what exactly are you asking?
You said we're probably the little decisions that we make in our
Most
life.
Most things we do don't interfere with Hashem's big plans. But if it would, Hashem wouldn't allow it. If you remember the election when they had to recount what happened in Florida, if that's not Minas Shemayim, I don't know what is. And it was unbelievable. Did the Supreme Court involved in an election? That was ridiculous, right? Clearly, the Rebbeinu Shlomo was running things.
Right.
I'm just saying, most of the time, I don't think the things we decide will or won't interfere with the bigger things going on. But if it would, and it could, then Hashem makes sure it doesn't.
Right. Is that only our actions, like our physical kind of actions, or like spiritually also? Because then, like, what's the point of our existence if we don't even?
Everything we do is important. Everything we do counts, and there's schar, and there's onus, and everything we do helps build the Beis Hamikdash on Ayla and helps bring Mashiach closer. All these things that we do have an impact. I'm not saying it doesn't make an effect. It does have an effect, and it does make a difference, and it does do something. But whether I decide to be a religious Jew or I decide to throw everything away, will that turn upside down to be Rebbeinu Shlomo's whole running of the world? I doubt it. That doesn't mean my mitzvahs don't count. It doesn't mean my heirs don't do harm. If I do it a chet, it makes a difference. If I do a mitzvah, that makes a difference. But one way or the other, I don't know if I'm on that level where Hashem has to suspend my bechira to make sure things work a specific way, like he did with Yehuda. But very few people are like that, that Hashem takes away the bechira to make sure he marries Tamar. He didn't want to marry Tamar. He was like forced. I don't know. It's hard to tell. I can't tell you from personal experience. No. Do they realize it at the time that this doesn't make any sense, or they're convinced that it does make sense? There are sometimes the Svarim suggest that Tzaddikim realize their Bechir is taken away. For example, let's give a good example. Sometimes Tzaddikim could change the events that are unfolding by their tefillahs. And they don't. And I saw in a very holy sefer, because Hashem takes away the Bechir to daven. If Hashem doesn't want this event to change, and it's sad that can change it with his tefillah, he just doesn't let him daven. And the events unfold. Yeah. It's a very powerful thought, but it's written by a very holy man who's well accepted, so, from a few generations back. Yes?
Why is it such a big, like, discussion that Pharaoh's Bechir is thinking about? Like, what's big deal? A lot of leaders.
Yeah, I don't know. When you think about it, Paro maybe has become the paradigm. He becomes the example. But it wasn't only Paro. It was Paro lost the Bechira. The Navi in Sefer Yehoshua says the 31 kings lost the Bechira. They had no choice not to fight Yehoshua. Hashem wanted them destroyed. And when Yeshua offered them to surrender, they couldn't surrender. They said, no, we're going to fight. They had no Bechira. And they were destroyed. Hashem wanted them destroyed. Chafni and Pinchas, the Navi and Shmuel says explicitly, Hashem took away the Bechira. They did a terrible chet in the Mishkan Shiloh. They could not do tshuva anymore. It's too late. Hashem took away the Bechira. There are open cases of the Navi where the Navi says it straight out, besides Paro, which is in the Chumash. So there's definitely many examples like that. And it keeps going to this day. But we use the case of Paro Mitzrayim as the template, so to speak. But it wasn't like that's the only time it ever happened, not by a long shot. Yeah.
The Bechir about Shiloh, you said Hashem took away the Bechir and Tzaddikim. So, is that so that they would daven?
They could have daven.
They could
have. He didn't want, like, hey, what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu? He wants to go into Eretz Yisrael. He davens, Ve'ez Chanan, Hashem, 5 and 15, Hashem says, enough, Rav Loch, that's it. Isn't that Yitzhak Shem took away his Bechira Davin anymore?
That's not that.
Right.
Okay.
Because had he Davin away, it would have changed things. It could have altered the course of the world. Hashem did not want it to alter the course of the world. If Moshe would have gone into Eretz Yisrael, it would not have been good. Things would not have worked out the way Hashem wanted it to work out, so he couldn't go into Eretz Yisrael. That's one example. Rashi brings in the Zos HaBracha, as Alila, Hashem found an excuse to keep Moshe out of Eretz Yisrael. It's like, what did he do not to go into Eretz Yisrael? He hit the rocks, I speak to the rock. Okay, no, it was wrong. I can't go to Eretz Yisrael because of that. I have all kinds of terusim, but ultimately they're just terusim. It's the message says Hashem did not want Eretz Yisrael. If he would have gone in, things would not have worked out the way Hashem wanted to work out. Couldn't come in. And the Gemara has many cases like that as well. The Ribbono Shel Olam makes things work the way they have to work, even if it means taking away Bechira or finding a bigger onesh for a seemingly inconsequential chet or whatever it is. The Ribbono Shel Olam has to make a cheshbon to make things work the way he wants it to work out. So again, when you're on that level, that's really where you see it more. That doesn't mean the little people don't count. We do. What we do makes a difference, but it won't derail the Ribbono Shel Olam's master plan. That's the point I make. So, you know, when you go back to the Mishnah and the Reda Yoina, ultimately, if the king's choices are in Hashem's hands, who cares who gets elected? It makes no difference who gets elected. Whoever gets elected is in Hashem's, a puppet in Hashem's hands. So again, this is where we have to make a shtadlus. We have to exercise our rights. And ultimately, whoever we vote in, the Ribbono Shel Olam will... whoever is elected, I should say, the Ribbono Shel Olam will work with to make things work the way Hashem wants it to work. As far as the question which was not asked, do you vote based on your moral barometer, or do you do it based on Gashmias? It's long been a tradition to favor the candidates that will help Eretz Yisrael. Many people today kind of look at, how will it help me personally? What do I have to gain or lose by this candidate's promises, which mean nothing anyway? Ultimately, it's really always been a messiah, so to speak, that you look at the candidate who we hope will be a bigger friend to Eretz Yisrael. And that's the one who we're interested in. There's a story which you may have heard from me before, when maybe LaGuardia, I'm not sure, someone was running for mayor of New York years and years ago, and he wanted to get an endorsement from Satmar Rebbe. So he went and had an appointment, and Satmar Rebbe was going to see him, and as he's waiting, the Gaboyim are there, and he's telling the Gaboyim what a good friend he is of the state of Israel, how much he loves Israel, and Israel's great, and he's such a Zionist, and they're all like turning colors, because Satmar is known not to be Zionist. So they keep saying, don't tell the rabbi that. Don't tell the rabbi you love Israel. Don't tell the rabbi. And he thinks they're crazy, because like that's what you tell Jewish people, that you love Israel. So he goes in to the rabbi, and he ignores the Gaboyim, and he tells the rabbi how he loves the state of Israel, and he'll do everything he can for Israel, and he loves Israel. And the rabbi says, you'll have my vote, and I'll tell my chassidim. So he leaves very happy, and the Gaboyim look at him in shock and can't understand, why are you endorsing this mayor who's saying he's going to love Israel and do so much for Israel? And the Satmar Rebbe said to his Hasidim, when a non-Jew doesn't like the state of Israel, it's not because he's a Satmar Chosid. So we look at their relationship with Eretz Yisrael as very important, and that really should be, I think, still the dominant consideration when thinking of elected officials, more than will I personally gain or lose by the policies espoused by this particular candidate. There's more to the world than me, myself, and I. Yeah. Master plan.
But our Hishtalas and voting is based on our prayer.
Correct. Ultimately, whoever gets elected will be a puppet in Hashem's hands. Right? So then the question is, so then why bother voting?
Right.
That's the flip side of it.
Right.
So you have to exercise your right to vote. You have to do yours.
So.
And then the Ribbono Shel Olam will do what he has to do with whoever's elected.
Certainly, in the end of the day, our voting is not
going to happen. Well, it does and it doesn't. In other words, let's put it this way: will it be a Nace Nigler or a Nace Nister? When the Ribbono Shel Olam, if Hashem is going to help Klai Yisrael through an elected official. So if it's someone who loves Israel and is backs Israel, then it's a Nace Nister. And if it's someone who until now has not been a big friend, it'll be a Nace Nigler. So we use our stylus to make it a Nace Nister.
Responsibility to worry about where they hold the moral issues, or do we not?
I really believe, I've heard people say this, I think they're wrong. I don't know, I don't think that our decisions are based on moral issues per se. If they're better for Israel, I think that's always been the rule of the day when it comes to from personal consideration. There are particular points that do concern us, whether it's a proposal that may have a moral ramification. Many years ago, there was on the ballot in Maryland a pro-life initiative which would curtail abortions in Maryland. And we were told in the yeshiva that we have to vote against the proposal. We have to vote against the proposal because the way the proposal is written by the religious right, if a mother is pregnant and the mother will die unless there's an abortion, let the mother die and not have an abortion. That is how the right-wing Christians believe. They believe abortion is wrong, even if the mother loses her life in the process. That is not halacha. Halacha states we save the mother's life, even if it means doing an abortion. And therefore, we voted against that proposal. So sometimes it seems odd, right? So we're against the pro-life proposals because they take it too far. We have to be aware of that. In fact, it sounds kind of like what we believe, but sometimes it's beyond what we believe, and it takes it too far.
There's a Hashkafic perspective. We have to worry if like the world's falling apart around us, or like then that's their problem.
The Ribbono takes care of the world.
You
can't lose sleep over the world. You can make ishtadlus. You have to make ishtadlus. You can make ishtadlus. And again, because when it comes to the world falling apart, each party says, you listen to the other one, the world will fall apart. So, yeah.
If you have more than one candidate,
maybe neither of them are going to be good,
maybe
they're both better than the time. If both candidates are bad,
yeah, then
you still have to vote.
You
still have to vote.
Still have to vote, but it's not a bad situation.
Can you vote for like a third party, someone who really doesn't have a chance of winning?
Ron Paul. I don't know. The Gedolei Yisrael said you have to vote. Did they say you have to vote Republican or Democrat? No. Is it really voting if you're throwing away your vote? Won't help. Won't help. We're all going to write in, you know. Or Shiva to be with. It's not going to help. I suspect it's not voting. You know, it could be there comes a point where the lifestyle of the candidates is so contrary to Torah that you can't conscientiously endorse this person and vote for that person. And you have two people like that. Then you're kind of stuck. So let's hope it doesn't come to that. I don't know what to say if that such a thing presents itself. But I think the nechama in all of it is the Rabbeinu Yoin, who tells us it's the Ribbono Shel Olam in the end. You know, the Sfarim teach us that on Rosh Hashanah it's proclaimed in Shemayim who's going to win the next election. There was a Rebbe who used to live in New York, a big tzaddik, used to say he knew on Rosh Hashanah already who's going to win the upcoming election. You just have to listen to the Baskel. If you hear the Baskel, you know who won the election already. It's already decided the Rosh Hashanah who's going to win the election. It's Min HaShemayim. But again, the fact that it's Min HaShemayim does not mean it's in the mitzvah to go and do your best. So that's what you got to do. Yeah. If the Gedolei Yisrael set the vote, then it's a mitzvah to go vote, right?
Little things like the proposals and the city officials?
Again, there is a degree of hishtadlus. There's certainly an element of hishtadlus, which makes it a little more difficult because that means you have to learn what all the proposals mean and know what you're doing with it. And sometimes you just go the easy way. You go to someone and ask them, I want hadracha, what should I vote on this? And usually there's one or two people who are in the position to be able to tell you and answer that question. I know that one person called, he called me today and said they're calling down every rabbi in the book and they're just making sure that they tell their congregants on Shabbos who to vote for. And I said, we don't tell people who to vote for. I tell people to vote. I will not tell them who to vote for. But can't you tell them the terrorist says, no, that says, we don't tell people who to vote for. If it's someone who asks me other things, I would answer them. If it's a person who never asks me anything, and all of a sudden they come and say, oh, Rabbi, who should I vote for? I won't tell them. No, it's like, you know, anything like that. If it's someone who you know asks you all the things they need to know, so then they're going to ask you this too, then you answer them. But if it's someone who likes to get the opinion of a dozen different people, and I'm not interested in being involved in that kind of back and forth. I think if we recognize the precarious situation Eretz Yisrael is in, it dominates our thought process. Now, it could well be that the generation after the Holocaust put Eretz Yisrael above everything else because they knew what a miracle it was and knew how fragile it was, and that overrode every other consideration. Today, we're a generation where we take Eretz Yisrael for granted, and we, Baruch Hashem, have not witnessed the events of our parents or grandparents, whatever that may be. So we don't think of it like that. We don't feel that achrayus. We don't feel that responsibility to Eretz Yisrael. But I believe it should be there. I believe that is a still to this day a responsibility that we have. Especially when you have maniacs who want to destroy Israel and openly will say so. And the world should have learned from before World War II. You have to trust the words of maniacs. Sometimes they mean what they say. So we can't take it lightly. And I still think that should be dominant. You know, ultimately, my parnasa, whatever it is, the Ibn Hashem takes care of it. Again, this goes back to Bitochen. I'm afraid that parnasa is going to be hurt by who's elected. I doubt it. It might. But ultimately, it's in Hashem's hands. So what I do with my vote will try to ensure that Eretz Yisrael has friends in high places. And ultimately, the Ibn Hashem runs the world anyway. So he'll take care of it one way or the other. But if I have a chelik in it, so that's my hishtadlus and that's my chelik. So it's like everything. The Ibn Hashem doesn't take care of it, but you have to do yours. Sure.
So, if
we try to do whatever we can to avoid Nes Nigla.
Avoid
Nes Nigla, right. Listen, some people say the fact that Russia voted to grant Israel statehood was a Nes Nigla. It was unbelievable. That the United States did, we knew at that time beforehand that they were going to vote in favor. But you needed a bunch of countries. It wasn't enough to have the United States. There was a vote in the UN. They counted up votes. That the Soviet Union was in favor. So I don't know if they still to this day know why they did that. Well, the person was the world.
All
right, listen, everything is a nation state anyway. You know,
right.
Again, this goes back to Shiva Zahavach would say, you know, everyone could decide for themselves what's a nace. Was the Six-Day War a nace? So Shiva said, yes, it was a nace. But don't people tell you it wasn't? Okay? Was the Entebbe rescue a nace? Yes, it was a nace. Will the people tell you it wasn't? Yeah, the people tell you it wasn't. It's always that way. So there's always room to say it's a nace nister because there's room to say it really wasn't because. But if you're a Maimon, it's very hard to ignore that this was a miracle. Okay. Next Mishnah, Mishnah Hey. Hu Haya Omer. He would say, back to Rabbi Gamliel ben Ashbihu the Nasi, Asei Ritzono Kiritzonecha, Kadesh Yase Ritzonecha Kiritzono. If you make the Ibn Hashem's will your will, then the Ibn Hashem make your will his will. Batel Ritzoncha Pnei Ritzono, and if you ignore your personal will to do Hashem's will, then other people's will also be batel before your ratzon. So, a person should make it his business, so to speak, that he wants to do what Hashem wants him to do. Life is difficult when you're always doing things you don't want to do, when you do things you're forced to do. And there are people, unfortunately, who do mitzvahs, and they learn Torah, and they daven, and they don't want to. And it's a battle for them, it's a burden for them, and they do it begrudgingly. But they do it. So that's not their ratzon. It's like they have to conquer their ratzon to do what Hashem wants. And if that's how you live, it's better than not doing Hashem's ratzon at all. But you're not going to expect to be Ribbono Shel Olam to do for you exactly what you want either. The flip side of it is, if everything you do is, if you do the Ratzon Hashem, and that's you, I want to do the Ratzon Hashem. If I want to do what Hashem wants, I live on that. Kiyem Chayei Nevorach Chameinu. If Torah and Mitzvahs is all my life is about, yes, I got to do other things. I have to go to school, and I have to go to work, and I have to do all those other things. But that's all secondary to my goal in life, to do Torah and Mitzvahs and everything else. Then the Ribbono Shel Olam is inclined to make sure the things that are high on your agenda are taken care of. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam wants you to continue to do what he wants to do, so to speak. So he'll give you whatever you need to take care of that. And in the event that I have the ability to, I sometimes have a conflict and I'm a vata in my personal ratzon, so it'll help in that other people's ratzonus will be brought to. It doesn't mean necessarily Hashem's ratzon will be your ratzon, but if you're mevatel your ratzon before Hashem's ratzon, so other people will not be able to bother you. That's a separate zechus, so to speak, you have. So it doesn't mean like the person who has to overcome everything gets nothing out of it. He does. If he's mevatel his ratzon, Hashem is mevatel other people's ratzon who want to interfere with him. But the ultimate goal is to make Hashem's ratzon your ratzon, and that it shouldn't be a conflict. It shouldn't be something that I have to struggle with. And it's something I should do with passion and love and desire and enthusiasm and all that good stuff. And then if that's the way the person lives, so then number one, life is good because you do what you want to do. Think about it like that. And the flip side of it is, the Ribbono Shel Olam wants to do what you want also. Now, if we understand this the way I'm saying it, I think it's like kind of simple. We begin to understand the power of great tzaddikim. When a great tzaddik says to Ribbono Shel Olam, I need for so-and-so to have a refuah, that has a lot more meaning than someone else who daves the same thing. Because someone who made it his life to do Ritzono Kirtzonecha, Ribbono Shel Olam's got to come through. And this is the story I stay with of Segel, Manchester, Rosh Hashiva, who was a big, big tzaddik. You know, everything we have today, Shemir Salash and Chaz Chaim Hershey, all comes from him. He is Rosh Yeshiva in England. He's a big tzaddik, and for years and years and years pushed Lordi Shemir Salash and Chavetz Chaim. And eventually, after years, 20, 30 years of doing this, someone had the Ein file of Chavetz Chaim Hershey Foundation, and now you have the English and the arts school. He had so many books available today to help Shemir Salash. But he spent decades teaching it in his corner in England and Manchester. So they have a story they say over how there was a Baruch in the yeshiva who the parents wanted to take him out of the yeshiva, he should go to college, and the yeshiva wanted him to stay in the yeshiva, he was very promising and he should learn well. And the parents said, no, we need him to come out and he has to go to school and that's that. Shortly after, he became very sick. and they tried certain treatments and it wasn't helping, and the parents were beside themselves. And they went to Shiva for bracha. And Reb Segal said, if you send them back to Yeshiva and forget about college, I guarantee he'll get better. And the parents weren't interested. Like, what kind of business is that? My son is sick, won't get better. No conditions. I could promise he'll get better if he goes back to Yeshiva. Forget about college. Parents came back a couple weeks later and said, fine, we accept, so to speak. So there was someone standing near Rav Segal who heard him in Shemona Esrei crying, you have to do this for me. I promised him. I promised him he's going to get better. He's got to get better. And he got better. A Rav Segal can do that. He can do that. If it's Asei Ritzono Ki Ritzon Mecha, he makes Ritzoncha Ritzono. It's a tremendous koyach. They don't squander it. They don't use it all the time. But they have a koyach. Now, deep down, it could bother you, why did he do that? If he has the power to make him better with his tefillah, just make him better with his tefillah, why does he have to get involved in his parents' decision with college and panos and everything else? And clearly, it must be that he felt this boy was destined for greatness and serving Klal Yisrael, and there's better, more for him than just being an accountant someplace. So he was disturbed. Now, there's no one making connections, well, because he went to college, Chasfalm, therefore he got sick. We're not saying that. We're just saying, he said, if you send him back to Yeshiva, I'll put everything on the line, so to speak, that he should get better. You know, we also think that the Sadi Davin says a kapitul to him and it's all over. It's not. He had to call in a personal favor, so to speak. And you can't do that for everybody. You can't do that for everybody. So, certainly he did it. But that's really the koyach of the tzaddik. When the tzaddik says something and davens for something, that becomes, I say, in a lifetime, so that a few times in that lifetime, you'll come and he'll be oisei ritzonecha kiritzono. There are some people who are, you know, able to do things with brachas more than others. They say over that, I forgot which tzaddik it was, that someone, I think they were childless, and they went for a bracha for a child. And they get a bracha, and they said, we want a guarantee. And he said, I can't give a guarantee. He said, we want a guarantee. They said, the only one who can give you a guarantee is Chacham Ben Tzion Abba Shaul. Chacham Ben Tzion Abba Shaul was the Rosh Hashiva Parat Yosef. He was a big tzaddik in his own right, great Talmud Chacham. He was childless for many years. I think his first he only had one child, and that one child was born after 10, 15 years of marriage. So the first tzaddik said, the only one who can guarantee is Chacham Ben Tzion. And he did. If he told someone, you will have a child, they had a child. So again, there are some people who have that koyach. But again, it all boils down to Asei Ritzono Ki Ritzon Mecha. It's always going to be that as a starting point. You want it to be Baruch Hashem, it's Ratzon, to be your Ratzon. Yours to be his Ratzon, you got to start the other way first. It's Asei Ritzono Ki Ritzon Mecha, and then as a product. So it's tremendously powerful. For us small people who aren't there, it's basically like I said before. We should try and strive that doing Torah mitzvahs is something we want to do, not something we have to do. Rabbi Shizkon Baruch used to say, don't look at it like taxes. All good citizens pay their taxes. They don't cheat on their taxes. But you can still be a good citizen and have loopholes. You can even be a personal chikanta and have loopholes. But the Torah who does what's on Hashem doesn't look for loopholes. He's not paying taxes by doing Torah mitzvahs. Torah mitzvahs is not, I give Hashem his due and now let's get on with life. This is life. Kihem chayeni v'ruchim enu. Life is Torah mitzvahs. And everything else is just necessary, but not what life is all about. So that's something I think we could all strive for. And ultimately, when we have that madrega of Asei Ritzonecha, we could also be Zeichet Ya'aseh Ritzoncha Ki Ritzono.